Okay, welcome everyone. Last session of the day, and I know you are hardcore people because you come to our session. It's the level 400. You're prepared for level 400? Absolutely. So this is about LINC, meetings and media, the detailed view. So this is the same session we did at LINC conference as well. And it really covers deep dive stuff. So expect to see some really heavy stuff in here. So my name is Johan Deliman. I'm a 6 years LINC MVP and also an exchange LINC server MCM. Well, or maybe former MCM, but I'll leave that up to you.
Yeah, and I'm Tommy Clark from Sweden. I'm a LINC MVP for 4 years, and I did a master's rotation last May, so about a year ago. And we have some content from that session, but that session was like 8 hours long, and we're going to try to compress it to 1 hour, so it's going to be fun. So we have, since it's a level 400 session, we have to start with the invite, right? And everyone should understand what this is about and the 200 okay and everything, right? Good, so you're in the right room then.
Yeah, so covering the agenda, probably most of you know what this is. This is the workload poster from LINC. And who can tell me right now that you understand everything that's on this poster? Well, the problem is it's all in once, or everything is in here, but it's just not very logically built up. It's just everything at the same time. So at the end of the session, you should be able to figure it out a little bit more. So we cover different things. Now, we don't only cover the slide, of course, but we cover also how LINC meetings work under the cover. So this is why we need conferencing protocol. We need to explain it a little bit. What is it? How does it look like? Why do you need it? So that's the first thing. Then we talk about the conferencing backend. So what components from LINC are involved for doing meetings and media? Then, of course, what components are involved on the server side, but we also have different modalities. We have many modalities, like audio, video, IM, app sharing, data conferencing. And then lastly, we actually talk about conferencing lifecycle. For example, ending a meeting or scheduling a meeting, whatever happens in the backend. Now, the last piece we are actually not going to present because at LINC conference we did have some more time. But we left the slides in here, so you have some extra information at the end of the slide deck. So first of all, conferencing protocol, CCCP or C3P. Does that ring a bell to any of you? Real little bit? Okay. So it's actually called Centralized Conferencing Control Protocol. So this is the protocol that's being used to schedule and, well, join two meetings, create meetings, delete meetings, all of that stuff. Now, this is very important if you want to do interop with other systems. The other systems also need to understand this protocol. So what is it actually? It's not a general available protocol. It's something Microsoft developed. So it's specific to LINC. So we can do creation, manipulation, and deletions of conferences. One important thing to understand is that although this is a protocol, the signaling being used is SIP. So LINC is using SIP everywhere, but we're sending the protocol, so the C3P messages, inside the SIP messages. So typically, this is SIP notify, B notify for communication between client and server, and it's an XML-based protocol. So I do have an example how it looks like. So you should all be familiar with this photograph or this capture. This is the snooper tool. So if you're doing any debugging on LINC, you probably know this tool. And this is the tool you use to debug LINC a lot. So in general, this is an example of a conferencing message. But you see, of course, this is just a regular SIP message. So we have a start line, service, but we talk to the focus factory, for example. Now, Tommy is going to explain what Focus Factory does. But you can see here we are talking to the focus factory, so the conferencing backend. Now, because this is a SIP message, we also have a content in here. So the content type is CCCP plus XML. So we know this is the conferencing protocol message. So, and then in the body, we see this is actually the XML package, the conferencing protocol package. And for this specific example, we have at conference as the message being sent to the server. So we do have different messages being sent between client and server. For example, add, modify, delete conferences. Delete, get conferencing capabilities, because maybe not all MCUs are registered on your link server. So potentially your data MCU is not configured. Other messages are get conferences. This is a user can request a server, I want to view all my conferences. And it will get a list of conferences. And also there are messages for users, for example, add user. That means a specific user is joining a meeting. Delete user, of course, this user has been kicked out of the meeting or removes himself from the meeting. For example, also lobby access, and for example, modify conference log to log a conference, yes or no.
Okay. So the focus and the focus factory and the MCU factory is kind of the service in Lync that manages meetings. And we're going to start with explaining this Treva and what they do. The focus is the kind of the spider in the spider web here. And when a client wants to create a new meeting or start a new meeting, the client will talk to the focus that will then talk to some other stuff that I will explain soon to start that meeting and change the conference date. Let's say that you have a meeting and the you have an attendee that you upgrade to a presenter in the meeting. That's the focus that will do that and write that information to the databases. And it also manages the policies before you join the meeting. Let's say it's a guest, so the focus will know that it's a guest and you will be placed in the lobby. The focus factory is a SIP entity that is only responsible for scheduling meetings. So the Outlook client or the plugin to Outlook will talk to the focus factory when you schedule a meeting or click on Meet Now, for example. And it will also hand back a meeting URI for that meeting to the client or to Outlook. Then we have the MCU factory, and that's a service that kind of provisions the meetings and talks to the different MCUs so that the focus knows where to start the meeting on what MCUs. And lastly, we have the conferencing database, and that's where all the information is stored on the RTC local database on the primary front-end servers. Most of the information is stored here, but not the scheduling information, because that's stored in Exchange. So it's stored in when you, for example, remove the meeting from Outlook, that will send a message back to the conferencing database and then remove it from there. So putting this all together in a diagram will kind of, I hope it will explain it a little bit better. Firstly, we have the scheduling client, and that's the Outlook client. And then to the right, we have the conferencing client, and that would be any kind of Lync client that wants to join the meeting. So at the first step, when a user schedules a meeting, Outlook will talk to the focus factory. That will in turn communicate to the backend database. And it will then send all the attendees' information for the meeting, what kind of different policies that this meeting will have, if it will be, like, for example, a muted IM meeting or something. So let's now fast forward to when the user will click on the join the join button in that Outlook message that will pop up. The Lync client will then talk to the focus here, and they will only it will only connect here to the focus, and the focus will then ask the backend database about what kind of policies should be applied to this meeting, if it's an attendee or a presenter and so on. If it's a presenter or an authenticated user that tries to join this meeting, the focus will then talk to the conferencing MCU factory, and the conferencing MCU factory will ask these different MCUs where to start this meeting. Let's say you have a pool with 5 front-end servers, and the first 2 front-end servers are having meetings and are like fully booked already. The conferencing MCU factory can start this meeting on the 3rd one or the 4th one. And so when the MCU is ready to start the meeting, the MCU factory will then send back that information in an HTTP message to the focus, and the focus will talk directly to that MCU. And it can then start or end the conference over there. After that is done, the focus will communicate back to the link client, and the link client will communicate directly to the MCUs. And this diagram shows what kind of protocols that it all talks between those these kind of services.
Yeah. So next topic we're going to talk about is modalities. This is actually a long topic because we have so many modalities and so much to tell about that. But of course, different modalities: instant messaging, audio, video, app sharing, web conferencing. So we start out with instant messaging, or, well, these are all the modalities. And of course, if you want to see what is the current status of all those conferencing services, you can use a PowerShell commandlet, get CS Window Service, where object name is like MCU, and then it will show you, for example, we have so many active conferences in the IM MCU, and for example, so many connected users. Of course, we will drill down into each modality specifically. And of course, the first one is IM conferencing server. So IM conferencing server is used, well, it's not used for P2P, but peer-to-peer communication is always sent via the server. But of course, IM conferencing is used in the IM conferencing server. Important here is SIP is the transport, which is very different from all the other modalities, because audio video is not carried over SIP, it's just the signaling. But for this modality, along with SIP, we send in the messages. So it's sent within the SIP message. So if you look at what exactly is this conferencing MCU, so the IM conferencing MCU is RTC IM MCU. If you look that up, you can view that in the services list. So it's a different service, so a separate service. And this is the name, and you can have a specific look at the service with the PowerShell commandlet, and then you say, okay, give me the information about RTC IM MCU. And then specifically, you see the information about this IM conferencing MCU. Now, I build up the same way for all modalities, so you will see this coming back for audio, video, and all the other stuff. For example, can you do auto-start IM conversations in a conference? It used to be the case, but in Link 2013, your IM window is hidden usually by default, so the IM conference actually does not start up automatically, unless you configure your client, if I remember correctly. Another thing is, can IMs be disabled during a meeting? Because you probably have had Microsoft meetings with a lot of people, and then people typing a lot of messages, and then you hear the ping all the time because you're watching email. It's quite annoying because it's beeping all the time. So, but you can remove this. So IM can be disabled. It's during scheduling, or for example, if you have a meeting and you translate it or configure it so that it's a Q&A meeting, and then IM window will be removed. Let's see, what else is important? IM only meetings. Can we do a meeting with only IM? And the answer is yes. it used to be not true, but the effect is quite strange because it tries to connect to audio. And if a certain meeting has audio disabled, it will come back without an error message, but you will have "I am in the meeting." It's a little bit strange, but it does work. So we don't need a persistent chat in that case. So can we do Q&A? Of course, this has been added to the client. Of course, it's important. You need a specific cumulative update. So the client requires this update from October 2013, because that's been added later to the product. So how does this look like? If you want to disable an IAM or the IAMs during a meeting, so this is the scheduling of a meeting. So we can do this during scheduling, we can disable IAM just by clicking this button. And of course, if we enable Q&A, then we can switch off the IAM window as well. So, and that's a different approach. So this is the experience you get. So if we disable and we join a meeting, it actually says to you, IAM is disabled in this meeting. But of course, you can enable Q&A, and then you enable this in, so you have your client, and on the bottom, you have the presenter options. So you can say Q&A, and then your client will switch to this interface. So a user can request, well, ask a question, and the presenters can respond to that. But you don't have the IAM window anymore. Any questions? Yeah? Well, it's co-located on the front server, front-end server. So, yes. Yes, that's conferencing server. Yeah. So now we drill down a little bit deeper. Like, how does it work and what messages are being sent? So this is, again, a SIP trace. So we see the snooper tool again. And of course, this is an invite. An invite is we are going to start a conversation. In this case, we are not going to start a conversation with another user. We're going to start a conversation with the AppConf chat service. So it's an application conferencing and it's the chat MCU. And of course, why is this important? The ID, that's the conferencing ID, which we use to join that meeting. Again, this is from my user account to that specific conferencing MCU. And of course, this is a SIP message, so we have content type. This means application SDP. Who knows what this means? Application SDP. It's not really meant to be used for IAM, but Microsoft uses the same terms for all the modalities. So SDP essentially says session description protocol for media. But of course, we know this is not media, but this is the same process building up the communication. Of course, in the M, so in here we have the SDP message. M actually means what is the media. So it says message, and everything that comes after this is not really relevant, but you will see in other modalities this really is very relevant. So, and this is an example for sending an IAM to the conference, then we're actually sending just a message to the conference. And then we see the content type. Well, this is much like web requests or email messages. So we have headers and body. Of course, this is not part of the snooper tool because we're not really interested in the content. It's been filtered out. But the message is essentially sent in this body. Any questions around the IAM MCU? Good. Then we move on to audio-video conferencing server. So this is not really used for audio alone, it's for audio and video. So it's a specific one or a special one. So I'm going to talk a little bit longer about this one. So it's covering about both audio and video. Again, it's the RTC AV MCU. So it, for IAM conferencing, it was IAM MCU, this is AV MCU. Here's the service. That's the name, and you can find the activity, for example, with this PowerShell commandlet. Now, if we look at the features, does audio start automatically when you join a meeting? Well, audio is the primary modality being used. So audio always starts, unless we configure something different. Can audio be disabled? Yes, we know for organizers, we can have specific policies to disable the audio. Can we mute single participants? Yes, in audio we can do that. In IM, for example, we cannot. Can we mute all participants? Yes, a presenter can do that as well. Can we have audio-only meetings? Yes, we can have audio-only meetings because we can set specific policies to users or presenters, and we disable, for example, the video, application sharing, and IM messages. So other things we can ask ourselves is, can we start video automatically? Video does not start automatically, because we want first our preview and then start our video, because maybe we have been to the hairdresser and we're not sure if everything is all right. So we do first preview. But if you join a meeting, every video that's in the meeting, you will receive automatically, of course. Can we disable or mute single video participants? No, we cannot. Can we mute all video participants? Yes, we can. So how does this look like? Disable audio and video. In this case, this is true. So this is actually a conferencing policy. So a conferencing policy you apply to a user, and then he has the rights to organize meetings according to all these policies. So at this time, this user can do audio meetings, video meetings. If we disable this, we will not be able to create meetings that include audio. So this is an example, both of these values to false, or at least audio. And normally, you would see that we have the dial-in conferencing information in this invite message from Outlook. If you disable audio, it will be removed from that message. But still, you have the meeting link. So we don't have audio, but still the meeting link is in there. And this is what you get. So you join the meeting, only IM, and that's it. So it does work. Or what else you can do is, if you join a meeting, you say, don't join the meeting, which you should not do, but don't join the meeting with audio. How do we mute the audio and video? So we have two options here, mute all attendees and block video. So this is also during scheduling that we can say we disable video, we disable audio, or we disable audio for the participants. And of course, we can do this during scheduling, but also during a meeting. So these buttons are also available if you consider during a meeting, people are talking to each other. No, I'm going to mute all participants. And maybe the video is too choppy, so we'll disable the video during the meeting. That you can do. So how can we configure some settings, for example? So this is the conferencing policy. So you already saw allow IP audio and video to enable or disable audio and video. But we have more flexible options. For example, do we allow multi-view? Because multi-view might potentially, well, you're sending more video streams over your network, so potentially you don't want that. So you can say we don't allow multi-view, and that's an organizer policy. There's a difference in the second one, enable multi-view join, because this is an attendee policy. So if you join a meeting from someone else which has multi-view enabled, if you are specified like enable multi-view join to false, you will not have multi-view as an attendee. Another one here is max video conference resolution. It's been deprecated because this is a legacy configuration, so it's Link 2010. It's not Link 2013. So what can we do in order to limit some some stuff on the network. Well, there is call admission control, of course. This is another mean of doing that. You can, for example, limit the way or limit the amount of information being sent by clients. But if you look at the total received video bitrate, the default value is like 50,000 kilobits per second. It's quite high. That's 50 megabits, which is enormous. But you will never get there because so much information you don't need to send. But you see the default value is very high. So potentially you can say we don't allow HD quality over the network. So potentially you can say we only allow 2 megabits, for example. You can do that. There's a difference between the total received and the video bitrate. The one is receiving, and that means all the receiving streams during a multi-view session, because you're receiving multiple streams. And this one is sending bandwidth. Now let's, yes. So what happens if the, well, the bandwidth actually goes higher than that specific value? Well, that's not possible, because the client will not send more traffic than he's supposed to. So if you say, for example, if we say total video bitrate, we configure it like 1,000 kilobits per second, then it will never send HD quality video. It will only use the codecs which it can use, and also the screen resolutions. So it will adhere to that limit. So it's really a limit. Everything below is fine, but we cannot go higher. Does that answer your question?
And that's basically how you can like decide on what codecs to use for audio conferencing or audio calls. If you set the policy to 100 kilobytes, you can never use those codecs that use more than that.
Well, no, this is something you can do. It's not like you have to do this, because usually if you want to control the network, you do it via call admission control, which we don't really cover here. That's actually a process of sizing your network and creating sites. And then between the sites, you say whatever bandwidth the clients are allowed to use. It's kind of similar, but within a LAN, for example, within a same site, you cannot use call admission control. But for example, if you say we never allow HD quality, then you can use this one also for peer-to-peer communication within a site. So there's a small difference there. No, exactly. There's no real option to say that. It link really, it's the same with call admission control. You have a certain amount of bandwidth you can use. And Link will use whatever codec it can up to that limit. And you don't have actually a say in what codec Link will use.
But it might be confusing because the max video resolution is still there for Link 2010 clients. And on that setting, you can choose from HD to VGA. But it's deprecated, so we shouldn't use that one anymore.
Yeah, you will see that. We have some slides on that. And maybe some other interesting thing to say is that there are a lot of Link conference sessions available. Also, is it Channel 9 or?
Yeah, no.
On Channel 9, and there's a very good one from Jeff Schurz, a fellow MVP, actually. And it's like, what the hell in the world are you doing with my network, I think it's called. And I must say it's a very good session. So. You will have a lot of information if you see that. So if we drill down into the audio piece, so specifically audio, we are going to do audio mixing, or, well, the conferencing service. Mixing, you'll see audio is mixing, video will use another mechanism. So we have to mix all speakers into a single stream. So this is an example of, for example, some clients connecting to the conferencing server. So, and you see some codecs being used. For example, a PSTN call will use G711. A certain link client will use G722 because that is the default codec. And potentially, if a link is not very symmetric, you can send one codec and receive another codec. That's potentially true. And then also we have here the link room system, which uses a slightly different codec. It's the G722/2 because that's stereo codec. So all of these streams need to be combined. So whoever is, all the speakers who are talking, we need to send that same stream to all the users. So there's a, so the link server does mixing. So how does this actually work? So for example, we have different streams coming into the conferencing server. And different streams may have different codecs. But we have to mix all these codecs together and send all the same information to all attendees. So what we have to do is we have to decode. Decoding is important because, well, all the codecs, they are optimized for network traffic and they're compressed. So we have to decompress all of that stuff. And we have to mix them. And then we have to actually re-encode and then also make sure that we are not sending, if a speaker is speaking, we are not sending his stream back to him because that would cause echo issues and stuff like that. So we need to filter out and mix the right information. So you will see that for audio, the server is actually doing a lot of work because we have CPU cycles doing encoding, re-encoding, decoding. And you will see that not all codecs are used in conferencing, because there's one missing here, which you would expect. So what's the preferred codec if you do a peer-to-peer call? That's RT audio. That's not on this list. And we will not use it for conferencing. And there's a very good reason for it, because we have CPU cycles to decode codecs. Now, RT audio is a very good codec, but not for conferencing, because it requires more CPU cycles. So that's why we don't use RT audio. So going a little bit deeper, so this is actually looking into the SIP message and the session description protocol. So in this example, you can see all the codecs being used. So what's important here is that this specific is M audio. So you remember M message from the IM conference. So this is M audio. And what you see here is a list of numbers which correspond to codecs. And it's important that the preference, the preferred order, it starts here. So 117, 114 is the preferred order. So you can see it's the same order from top to bottom here. So these are the codecs being used. Now, does anyone know what's the difference between, if you see a codec, for example, 117, it says 8,000, 114, says 16,000. Does anyone know what the difference is between these two? Excuse me?
Sampling.
Sampling, yes. And that's meant to be wideband and narrowband. So you have better quality wideband, and narrowband is actually PSTN call quality. So if you know this is the preferred order, it does look a little bit strange that we would prioritize a narrowband codec, don't you think? Because link has good quality, right? So when I was creating this session, I was like, OK, what's wrong here? There must be clearly something wrong, because that cannot be the case. So I did some digging around, and I found the answer. I found the answer in some RFC. And it essentially says someone in the past had made a mistake of configuring this conferencing description, well, the name of the codec, has been wrongly configured in the past. We cannot use, or we cannot change, because it has to be backward compatible. So it does look like a narrowband codec, but in reality, it's a wideband codec. So I was like relieved that my logic was still there. So if we know this, then of course this one and this one are actually wideband codecs. And we see all the wideband codecs are on the top. So we have 6 wideband codecs. Now, it's important to understand that this is the first invite from a link client to a conferencing server or another client. And all the narrowband codecs are on the bottom, and we have some special ones completely on the bottom. XMSRTA, that's the RT audio codec. This one is specific, Silk. Silk is being used by Skype. So the link client already understands Silk codec from Skype. This is already there for a few updates. So it's in there already because in the near future, we will have peer-to-peer calling between Skype and Link. Then we have some different codecs. For example, this can be used if you have bad network and we have to send extra packets, for example. And then well-known codecs, PCMU, PCMA, that's for G711 standard audio codecs. So this is a little bit of explanation around what codecs are being offered by the client. You will see this is not a list being used in conferences because there's more going on. Now, we drill down a little bit deeper into the invite because we are going to do an invite and we see appconf audio video, so the audio video MCU with the conference ID. Then we say, okay, we have the SDP message below here. So it says audio, and it's exactly the same as you saw before. This is scrolling down on the message because I did not have enough place on the screen. So it says audio, and then all of these codecs. So and you can find all the codecs below here. So if you do some troubleshooting, you can see that yourself. Now, if we complete the SDP negotiation, what codec are we going to use and what IPs and ports we are going to use. So the conferencing server actually sends this list. So the client sends this list, the conferencing server sends this list. So it's more limited. Some codecs are not used. So we have to, all the codecs in red are actually not used during conferences. So we see the RT audio, the Skype codec, some older codec from I think it's originated from Polycom and narrowband codecs here. So these are not used. If we then look at the final message, so we have a re-invite. So the first invite is inviting someone in a conversation. The second invite is saying, okay, I'm going to use, or we are using these IP addresses and ports and these codecs. So that's around 10 seconds after the first invite. And this is for every conversation you have. So you can also view that in Snooper. So it's again an invite. And why do you know it's a re-invite? You can see this in here. So this is a re-invite because it says the to message and it has a tag associated with it. Because if I go back, you will see that in this occasion there is no tag field. So if you see a tag, that's always a re-invite. So the re-invite, and then, of course, we have the application SDP message, again, audio, and then candidates. For those who know about what candidate are we going to use, for example, if we use the Edge server or peer-to-peer communications, you can see whatever candidates are used in the conversation. So this is the final list of codecs we are going to use. So if you then look at the first message, the second message from the conferencing server, so we know these are not used. And from the re-invite, we actually say we are not going to use this codec. So this codec is a specific codec for room systems, which usually the link client does not use. But you can understand it because the room system can send this codec to the link client. That's no problem. But, well, if you're talking about
a link room system, so it can be a Polycom, a Smart, or any of the others.
Yeah, it's not, for example, it's not the group series, for example. That's a different endpoint. I'm not sure what codec they are using. Potentially, they're also using the stereo codec, but you can see that in Snooper. So if you're curious about that, you can just use Snooper and you can see it. So this is the final list of codecs we are going to use. So these are going to be used by the Link client, the Link 2013 client in the conference. So potentially this can change over time. So this, at this stage, when we created the presentation, these are the codecs. Okay, I wanted to show you how you can view, for example, in Network Monitor, because it is a link, it's a conference from Microsoft, you cannot show Wireshark. So if you look at packets being sent, well, and I actually like Network Monitor, because it says here link client, and you can see specific conversations from a specific client, which you cannot do in Wireshark. So if you want, because there are so many messages, you can drill down into whatever the link client is doing, so it's kind of easy. Now, in this case, it says UDP. We are talking UDP to the Edge server, for example. Now, UDP does not say me much, because I can go into the payload to view whatever protocol is being used. So, but if I do something smart here, and I convert this to an RTP message, then it says, actually, this is the decoded frame from this, and it says G722 audio. So you can view this in Network Monitor. Excuse me? Well, you just right-click, you select this, right-click, decode, and you get this decoded frame. So now, if you look at what are all the media streams, what's going on? So this is like a little bit like the protocol poster. So for example, the link clients are joining the meeting. So they're using HTTPS because they click the join link. Well, they don't always use the join link, because in Link 2013, they actually just use SIP, because you don't see the browser popping up. So potentially HTTPS, potentially just SIP messages. And we know, of course, from a client external will connect to 443 on the Edge server by default. Usually, we configure it like this. And then we send 5061 between Edge and conferencing server. Of course, the internal clients will connect directly. But if you look at the media, the external clients will always talk for an audio conference. They will talk UDP 3478, because that's the port being used by the link client. So the Edge server actually send a UDP stream to the conferencing server. He's going to use different ports, because these ports, 49152 until 57500, they're actually the conferencing port range for audio on the server by default. You can change them, but usually we don't change them. Of course, a media stream is not both ways. It's a one-way stream and another one-way stream. So we have two streams at the same time. So it's in a different stream, different ports, different IP addresses potentially. So the conferencing server will send to the Edge server port UDP 3478. And it will, the Edge server will send to port 1024 until the upper port range. This is also by default. You can change that if you want, but by default, these are the port ranges. Well, that's not related to conferencing server. 50K range is for the Edge server. But I have, I think one of the later slides does have some more information about that. So internally, also the same port range on the server and the same port range on the client. Of course, audio, we use UDP because that's more performant than TCP. And in the case we also have a mediation server and a PSTN user joining the call, then we are sending and receiving on the same server port ranges, because they are both media servers, and all the media servers for audio have the same port ranges, which you can configure, but usually that's by default, and we leave it like that. So any questions? So what happens if we use a Link mobile client? It's a little bit different. Because the Link mobile client does not do just SIP. It uses HTTP to the reverse proxy. And also, if you have an internal mobile client, you will have to send it to the external side of the reverse proxy. Now, this is TCP 443, but we send it to TCP 4443. It's important. If you do a mistake here, then some stuff will go wrong. Now, the audio streams essentially go the same like the link clients. So they essentially go directly to the link mobile clients and use the same port ranges as the other clients. No questions? Okay. So let's drill down a little bit in video. Let me check the timing. Okay. So video details. Video is switched. So instead of doing audio and mixing, we are going to do video and switching. That's a big difference. The default codec, of course, is H.264 SVC. So that's the new codec being used by the link clients, link 2013 clients. Link 2010 clients do not use that codec. What is RTVC1? Does anyone know? That's 2010. It's actually RT audio, but it's the codec actually has this name. So RTVC1 is RT audio. And this one, H.263, that's a very, very old codec being used in the OCS days. Well, Link 2010 still supports it, but Link Client 2013 does not longer support it. Although it was used for interop with other systems, but the quality is very, very low. So we don't use it anymore. So if we look at the same process for doing audio streams, we look at the SDP sessions or the offer, we see that for video, we only have three protocols. So it's the H.264 UC, and the UC is important here. So if you want to do interop with other systems, they need to support the UC version, or it will not work. Then we see the RTVC1, so that's RT video. And then this is the forward error correction codec in case we have so many drop packets and we need to send more information. Yeah, okay. So video switching. So we all know we can have multiple streams because if we are in a multi-view session, we have multiple streams being sent to that client. And potentially clients send video streams as well. So in this case, everyone is sending a stream. Those two are not using multi-video view. All those three others are using multi-video view. Now, in case some client decides, for example, because at this stage, everyone is using the same codec and same resolution. So in case this client decides to go full screen, for example, we have to send another stream from this client. Because he requesting, for example, an HD quality video stream. Because we are sending no HD video quality stream in these other streams, he will have to send two streams. Now, there is more to that. For example, video switching and rate matching. So for example, a certain client is potentially sending this video stream with this quality. So this is a very low screen size. So if you start up your client and you go into a conference, for example, you have very small videos on the top, you will see this resolution. Now, what can happen? This one video stream can be sent to many clients, but in different frame rates. So for example, if you have a tablet or a phone, you don't require 30 frames per second, depending on your device, because your device is not capable of displaying that correctly. So, and maybe your network is not capable of sending all of these streams. So it's important to understand that if you want to go from 30, 15, or 7.5 frames per second, the client does not have to send another stream. The conferencing server will make sure that it will do the rate matching on its own. So potentially, this client is sending many different streams, and you see different resolutions. So all of these streams originate from the same client. So depending on what resolution is being requested from a certain client, we will change resolutions and send more streams. So important here is no decoding, no mixing, no re-encoding. Because we're just requesting a new stream, we're not transcoding it to some other resolution. Yes? Yes, absolutely, but I think it's limited up till 5. It will not go like 200. That's impossible. I think the maximum is 5. Well, there are other clients. So this is an example of one client. Of course, we have all the other clients potentially also sending. But if a specific client is not watching your video stream, you're not sending that video stream to that client. So it all depends on what view has the other client. Well, if that user is being viewed, yes. And we are not above the limit, then yes.
But you can complicate it, because let's say you have 50 users in a meeting. 5 users can choose to see 5 people, and 5 completely different users choose 5 other people. So we're going to send 10 streams then. And depending on resolution and everything, you're going to send different amounts of streams over the network.
Well, not only is bandwidth, also is CPU.
And camera.
So there's more to that. But of course, if it's not capable of sending all of the streams, it will not do that, of course.
I was going to say, does it prioritize in any way audio or video?
Yes.
I have this experience yesterday where people were adding video and all of a sudden my audio was going to go off.
The default way is essentially always prioritizing audio. Link client has always done that, also OCS. But of course, Wi-Fi is not very reliable, so potentially there's something else going wrong on the Wi-Fi as well. So it's hard to say that specific. Well, probably not. By the way, there is us, the experts, so because I know we are going to run just on time, or potentially just over. Some questions you can still ask it as the experts. We will still be there. Hope you will be there as well. So joining a video conference, just the same way again. So it's an invite to the video conferencing, audio video conferencing MCU, is the SDP, and you see all the messages in here, all the codecs. So it's exactly the same as we saw before. So for video, I'm not going to show you the joining, but just adding video. So this is only the streams if we add video. But it's not like the workload poster, just everything at the same time, just partly building up. So we are sending video streams from the external client over UDP 3478. So exactly the same as audio. Now, here's the difference, because the edge server sends to the conferencing server on the video port range, which is different from the audio port range. So this is 57501 until the upper port range. You can also customize that, but that's your choice. So again, the sending stream from the server is exactly as the audio stream. To the server, to the edge server, UDP 3478, and to the full client port range on the client. It's the same thing as the internal client. So to the conferencing server on the high port range or the video port range, and the 64K port range on the client. Any other questions around audio video? Okay. So application sharing, that's another modality. So again, RTC, AS, MCU. You see the service here, the executable, and the PowerShell commandlet to view the sessions. Now, for app sharing, of course, does not start automatically. Someone has to present something. So it's a manual action. Of course, all the attendees will see the presented content. Another question is, can the app sharing content be disabled? Of course, we can disable it. We have some options. You can say, we enable desktop sharing, desktop, single application, or we set it to none. Because I have clients that say, we don't want to show the desktop. So you cannot show the desktop in a meeting. Then you have to configure it, single application. So app sharing only meeting, of course, that's not really possible. So how do you add desktop application sharing? So either the desktop or a program. So that's probably something you already know. Not too difficult here. So application sharing codecs. So how many codecs will we use for the application sharing stuff? So if we share a desktop or application, that is application sharing. So it calls, well, the name is application sharing, but you can also do the desktop. Kind of confusing, but still you can control it by policy. And actually, RDP is being used encapsulated in RTP. That sounds quite difficult. So we are using RDP, and we are sending it in RTP streams just like audio and video. So on the back end, we actually use the same interfaces like audio and video on the AV servers. And this is an example of the SDP offer. And we see only one codec, because we RDP, just one thing, not too important. So we don't have choices here, so it's RDP. Again, adding application sharing to a conference. Again, the invite, now it goes to the application sharing service. And we see the SDPs. We see the M is application sharing, and the codec being used here, X data 90,000. So can we configure application sharing in conferencing policies? Of course. Do we allow users to schedule meetings with application sharing, yes or no? So that's a scheduling organizer policy. Do we enable app desktop sharing, yes or no, or desktop or single application or none? You can also use that. And of course, can we configure it like limiting on the network? Because application sharing is essentially not very easy to control over the network. It sends a lot of information. Sometimes it's kind of spiky. If you change a lot of information on an application, then it needs to send all that to the clients.
And it's also dependent on what kind of resolution you have on your screen. So if you have like 1024 resolution, it's not going to send so much bandwidth. But if you have a 4K screen or you have dual screens, it's going to be more, of course.
So I've seen customers configuring this app sharing bitrate because there's no other way to do that, because call it mission control does not work for application sharing. There's no option for that. Well, if you look at the networking guide, they have some guidelines. And at the end of the presentation, we do have those slides attached. And it says, depending on your resolution, this is expected. I think it's minimum you actually need to make have it workable, and then like maximum. But they're pretty high values. Maybe if some time, we can show it at the end of the session, or maybe as the experts can come by and we can show it to you. So app sharing. So adding app sharing to a meeting, what will happen? So if we do this from a client and we are sharing some information here. We are sending to TCP. Oh, wait, that's different. We're not using UDP. So app sharing never uses UDP because that's RDP. RDP is TCP-based protocol. So we are sending it to TCP 443 on the AV Edge server, not on the Access Edge server. Of course, our conferencing server will have to send it to TCP 443 on the AV, well, on the internal interface from the Edge. And it's originating somewhere from 49152.65535. This might be a little bit confusing because this port range actually covers both audio and video port range, which is quite annoying. Usually we reconfigure the application sharing port ranges. And also in the networking guide, it's clearly explained what you should do there. So also mind that although this is a sharing session and RTP, it's just one stream. The stream sends the information back and forth. So it's not two different streams. It's one single stream. So from the link client, essentially the same, the server port range and originating the client port ranges. If it's federated, and here is an interesting twist. So if it's federating, we're just still sending from the conferencing server to Edge to port 443, but to the other federated clients or federated Edge servers, we are sending to 443, but the originating ports are the 50K port range, the 10K port range on the AV Edge server. So in this case, we require this port range to be open from internal to external.
How many of you open up the 50K port range inbound? So everyone should do that, especially if you have a lot of users. But if you have time at the end or ask the experts, we can talk more about why.
Yeah.
Yeah. To the Edge server.
Well, it's not required, but you can do that to optimize network streams.
Yeah.
And that's certainly important if you do a hybrid deployment between Office 365 and your on-prem environment. So it is, well, to optimize the streams. So the last one is the data MCU. Of course, another service, the service name, and the PowerShell commandlet. Now, web conferencing obviously also does not start automatically. And maybe it's kind of confusing. It says web conferencing, but essentially it's data conferencing. Because web conferencing, you think, OK, it's in a browser. OK, I join a meeting all the time via browsers. But data conferencing essentially doing whiteboarding, for example, doing annotations, doing polls, all of these things. Okay, not too important. We do have some conferencing settings. We can say allow annotations, yes or no, allow Q&A, polls, all of that stuff. Now, an important piece here is that the media streams will be very different. Well, it's not a media stream, but the connections will be different. Now, you see here that, for example, this is an event coming from the LS data MCU, so the link server data MCU, and it says, connection to the web conferencing Edge server has succeeded. So every time a link server starts up, or a link conference, well, the data MCU server essentially starts up, it will connect to Edge directly. This is necessary because there is no multiple streams or multiple connections from the server to the Edge server. So it is the conferencing server that connects to Edge at startup, and then we can do the data conferencing from external. So this is important to understand that this connection will always be there. So it's a persistent connection essentially going to the Edge. If this connection is not there, your clients will not be able to add whiteboards, for example. And of course, the client connects to TCP 443 for PSOM, that's the protocol being used for data conferencing. Of course, this is not the AV MCU, but the conferencing server. No, not the AV Edge, it's the conferencing Edge in this case. Of course, internal clients connect directly to the conferencing server or on port 8057, like the conferencing server does to Edge. So now, if we add PowerPoint sharing, for example, it's a little bit different because the client goes to HTTPS, also the mobile client, and we essentially go to the Office Web App server. So one difference here is externally is 443 and internally is also 443. So it's a little bit different from what Edge, the ports are doing for Link server. And internally, we're also just connecting to port 443. Okay, so that's the last piece, conferencing lifecycle.
Yeah. So one more thing about the STPs that we talked about. How many of you guys have seen the STPs or digged into that things before? So not so many. And it's not that usual that you have to do that if it's only Link. If you only have Link talking to Link and everything is 100% Link, you never have to really care about the STPs. But as soon as you introduce something legacy, some PBX or some legacy video conferencing system or something, you should, at least even if everything is working fine, you should watch out for in the STP messages what kind of codecs are being used just to make sure that it's optimized and that it's using the correct codecs for the communications. So that... and also, it might be good if you... Yeah, for troubleshooting information as well, of course. So the conferencing lifecycle is... just to start with a short recap of the first things. And when the Outlook client schedules a meeting with the Focus Factory will schedule that meeting in the SQL backend database. And the meeting will be stored in that database until it will be activated. And one thing that we find out was that even if you try to schedule a meeting when you are, let's say, offline, it will, in some cases, work, and in some cases, it will not work. And depending on how you have set this policy, the assigned conference type by default, if it's true, you can schedule offline meetings. And that meaning that you always have the same meeting ID. And if you set it to false, you cannot schedule the offline meetings, but you will always get a new meeting ID. So the default in Link on-prem is true, and the default setting in Link online is false. And I think most of my customers have set this one to false now, and they create a new meeting for every new meeting that they schedule. If you have it set to true, we will find in this registry key in the reg editor. And that's basically used for scheduling offline meetings. Do we want to show this in the demo? Yeah.
I think we should go on.
We talked about that so much already. So there is a tool that we often used called DB Analyze in the resource kit. Should we do that?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. We can show them. So essentially what this tool is doing, that's a resource kit tool, it allows you to look at a lot of information from within the Link database, because you're not supposed to connect to the Link database and get some information out of there. This is the supported way of doing that. It connects to the Link database and gets all the information. So for example, if I do this, if I run this command, it will get all the information from this specific user account, but it will connect to the Link database and it will give a user report. Now a user report has a lot of information in here. So for example, presence policies, you can see in here the certificates connected to the user. They are all stored in the database, but also the information we are interested in. So this information, conferences organized by this user. You will see that at this time, there's also only one conference ID, and it's called the static meeting to true. So this is the default assigned conference ID, which is currently in the database. So if we now schedule a meeting, and I configure some options, because by default, we use this the default conference ID, because this is exactly the same as you saw in the script. So this KMT10C57. But if you change some options here, we say, OK, this is a new meeting. Then it will connect to the link server. And now you see it's a different ID. So if I now schedule this, let's say test. And I run the same commandlet. Well, it's not a commandlet, it's essentially an exe. So you will see that there's an extra entry in here. So this is the new key, the conference ID, and with the title, it's anonymous because I didn't configure so much, and it's not the static. It's not the static meeting, so that's set to false. Currently, it's anonymous. So at this time, we can view whatever meetings have been scheduled by the users. So, well, the second one was actually going into the specific conference and get a report. But because we're running out of time, we're skipping this one.
So as soon as a client clicks the join link and joins the meeting, the conference will be activated. And you can see all the C3P messages and everything going forward there. And the meeting will run. And then when it's time to close down the meeting, all the users will leave the meeting or just click the red cross to exit. After 90 minutes, after every enterprise users have left the meeting, that meeting will be shut down and deactivated. So that means that anonymous users will be kicked out after like 90 minutes, unless you go in and click the end meeting button. That will kick everyone out directly. So if you choose end meeting, or if you remove the meeting from Outlook, or if the organizer is disabled or deleted, that will also send a conference delete to the server. After the delete, it will be an expiry time plus a 15-day grace period before the meeting is expired. And that's when all the meeting content is deleted from the server. And we have some settings to change that. So you can change the content grace period to 10 days if you want that time frame limited. And we can also change the max content storage megabytes, for example, if you don't want the users to upload large files.
Yeah, that specific configuration, for example, admit anonymous users by default, or the assigned conference type by default. If you set that to true, then no one actually is able to use the same meeting ID.
And also large meeting support. We're just going to mention this, but a default link installation can hold meetings up to 250 participants. After, is it 75 users?
Yeah.
It will change modality to a large meeting. And that will change some of the settings you can do inside a meeting. So let's say you schedule a meeting with 250 people. You have to make sure that all the presenters are presenters before they join the meeting. So you have to do that from the link, the Outlook invitation. So if you want to have a meeting up to 1,000 participants, you have to create a different pool and host your meeting over there.
Yeah, and essentially Microsoft released a white paper last week about large meetings specifically. We were not able to include download link in the papers, but if you follow our blogs, then you will see that on there.
And with that, we have the zip message for
bye,
saying that we have 10 seconds left.
So remember, we have still the Ask the Expert, so meet us there if you have any questions, because we're exactly now at the end of the session.
And there are lots of more reference slides at the end of this presentation as well, if you download it. So thank you for coming.
So thank you very much.